Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
The MBTA is facing down profound financial challenges due to this pandemic. The Massachusetts Taxpayers Foundation, a business-backed think tank, warns that by 2022, the T could have an operating budget deficit of over $400 million. A shortfall that could present an existential threat for the agency. Eileen McEnany is the president of Massachusetts Taxpayer Foundation, and she joins me now. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Eileen.
Good afternoon, Tiziana. Thank you.
Also with us is Jared Johnson, the chief operating officer of Transit Matters. Jared, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, join this conversation. Are you still riding the MBTA? If you're not, what will get you back on trains, on buses again? Are you concerned about the long-term health of the system, what that could mean for Massachusetts? Call us, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us, at Radio Boston. So, Eileen, I want to start with you. Your report said the budget shortfall facing the T is existential. What does that mean? How bad is the picture?
Well, it's pretty dire, and I would say that the MBTA has not been spared the pandemic's impacts, right? We've heard a lot about the pandemic's impact on the greater economy, certainly on the state budget, and I think it has hit the MBTA as well. But this time around, things are a little different. And as you know, the Mass Taxpayers Foundation has been focused on the MBTA's finances for quite a while. We had issued a report back in 2015 called The T, the End of Its Line, where we were sounding the alarm bell back then about some of the fiscal challenges and the operational challenges. And after 5 years of progress by the Fiscal and Management Control Board, we seem to be backpedaling.
So in a statement, the MBTA told us that the outlook is, quote, directionally accurate from your report, end quote. But they do say they'll be, quote, taking actions during fiscal year 2021 to further reduce costs for fiscal 2022 in advance of developing and finalizing the fiscal year 22 budget. So I want to get your reaction to that and sort of your sense of the biggest drivers of the way you're projecting the shortfall and if the T's response might change those projections.
Yeah, well, I think it's always important to note that with any projection, you're doing it at a point in time, right? And so with the best information we have, that is our current projection. And so certainly if the MBTA takes measures in the short term that fundamentally changes the direction of those numbers, then that projection would have to be revised. So, and that's actually good news to hear, that the MBTA will proactively do things to address the shortfall. Our purpose was simply to kind of give the governance structure that will succeed the Fiscal Management Control Board a status report of where things stand so that there would be an urgency about their work and there would be an immediate focus on these issues.
So let me turn to you, Jared, and get your reaction to the financial picture in the report from the Mass Taxpayers Foundation.
Yeah, I think what the report is real clear about is that resources are needed and that, you know, anything less than, you know, new resources from Beacon Hill and, you know, to a certain extent, at least in the short term, from Washington, you know, is going to, you know, amount to an abandonment. And, you know, if we want to have a quick recovery from COVID and from the financial and economic impact, we need to have a strong transit system.
And so what does that mean during a time when we know that ridership, for real reasons, concern about public safety, the transmission of a pandemic disease, is going to suppress ridership revenues?
Yeah, you know, I think what that means is that, you know, we have to continue providing, you know, service for our essential workers, you know, because on certain lines, you know, the ridership, you know, never dropped below, you know, high 33% of the everyday ridership, and that is growing, you know, each and every day as we start to reopen, you know, different sectors of the economy. And so, you know, we do have to think about transportation as what it is, which is a public good. And so, you know, there is a need to fund it, even when, you know, revenues from fares are down, and that the, you know, the ability of the T to provide enough service to keep crowding low and continue up with their cleaning regime, you know, and hope to see them providing masks and doing some of these other things that do cost money. That also is essential to gaining the public's trust and confidence in getting back onto the system.
Eileen, I'm going to ask you the same question. I mean, the pandemic has created a good deal of this precarious situation. You got an entire pool of riders that have evaporated. Jared's laid out some of the things that T would need to do to bring that ridership back. Is bringing that ridership back the only solution here? And you know, how do we think about what the T needs to do next?
Well, it's definitely a fundamental part of the solution. And I think, you know, we need to do what it takes to instill confidence in the riding public, in the commuting public. And I know we can't do it too quickly because there's a balancing act here for the MBTA as it tries to adhere to social distancing protocols that, you know, not as many riders will fit in cars and so forth. And so it definitely is a balancing act. But I think instilling confidence by making sure the public is aware that they have increased cleaning, that they are doing all that they can to make it a safe experience and a reliable experience is going to be key. I mean, in the short term, you know, that they will need more resources. Hopefully the federal government will, you know, provide some of them because, as we know, the state's fiscal situation has also been challenged by the pandemic, right? According to our most recent revenue estimate, the state's looking at a $6 billion deficit. And so, again, maybe the federal government will provide assistance and can fill that gap. But it's a pretty precarious situation.
So to that point, Jared, when budgets are precarious, we know that there's real vulnerability for those who have the least voice in the public sphere, and that can include people of color, low-income workers, et cetera, those who also, as you have already pointed out, rely heavily on public transportation for their work, economic viability. So as we face what it sounds like will be serious budget deficits for the next couple of years, how do we keep equity in the forefront while addressing those budget concerns?
Yeah, you know, I think it's about really making sure that those riders' voices are represented on Beacon Hill, and I think it's about prioritizing their needs. I think, you know, there's going to have to be a tough conversation about, you know, where buses are allocated, and where, you know, train operators are allocated. And I think what's really key is making sure that we prioritize, you know, those communities, those environmental justice communities, those Black and Brown communities where the bulk of the essential riders are coming from. I think that's how we center those folks and how we make sure that their voices aren't left behind in a really tough budget cycle.
Let's turn to our callers. Are you riding the T? If not, when will you get back on the T? Are you concerned about the T's revenue shortfall, about its long-term viability? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have Helen on the line from Cambridge. Helen, what's on your mind?
I ride the red line between Porter and Central, and there's been talk about how busy they are cleaning the T. I want to say that the red line is filthier than it has ever been. 2 days after it rains, there are still muddy footprints all over the platforms. There are pigeons flying around in Porter Station, pooping on the escalators. It's really quite scary because if they aren't doing the regular cleaning, it's hard to believe that they're doing the special cleaning they talk about. There's also a huge maintenance backup. I mean, Porter Square is underground. There's groundwater leaking through, all kinds of, you know, wall panels are rusting through and will have to be replaced. So whatever they think they have as a budget for maintenance is going to have to be greatly increased.
Helen, thanks for that. And Eileen, I'll turn back to you on that, and Jared, actually. So two pieces there. You know, maintenance, which is addressed in your report, Eileen. And Jared, you know, you talked about the cleaning to put riders back on. We hear Helen saying, if there's sort of a baseline dirt or filth to it, how do, can I feel confident that the kind of sanitization that's necessary for me to be safe from the pandemic is happening? You guys can feel free to jump in either way there.
Well, I would say, you know, I agree with the caller, right, that there has to be visible signs that the amount of cleaning has increased. And I think that that's critically important to instill confidence. And with respect to the maintenance, you know, I would say there's two aspects to maintenance. Certainly the regular routine maintenance that should be part of the operating budget. And then there is a capital investment piece where there are actual improvements made to the system. And we are going to issue a second report that focuses on the capital outlook, and so that will be part of a second report, and the third will be just, you know, how to go forward, you know, given all of these challenges, which will be the most difficult of the three to write. But you know, I think having visible cleanliness is a key aspect to this for sure.
Jared, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'd absolutely echo that, and you know, not to dismiss, you know, what the caller is saying, because it's you know, it is incredibly important, and you know, perception is reality. I do know that they have said, and I don't know if it's the case, you know, at Porter, but they have said that you may see, you know, trash on the ground, or you may see some other things, because they're really focusing on cleaning the poles and cleaning the cleaning the escalator hand, you know, handrails and things like that. But that's still not an excuse. And I think that, you know, very few people are going to get that message. And so it's important that they both, you know, prioritize the, you know, the high touch surfaces, but also make sure that you don't have trash or pigeon and, you know, pigeon excrement, you know, sort of contributing to an overall look of uncleanliness, because, you know, that's a huge part of how people perceive the tea and how they perceive whether or not it's being cleaned.
Before we run out of time, I do want to make sure to ask you both about the Fiscal Management Control Board. It was developed after problems in 2015, which led to its creation. Its sort of statutory tenure ends at the end of June. Governor Baker is pushing for some new board, with the majority of those members being appointed by the governor himself. I want to ask each of you, what is the right next step after the Fiscal Management Control Board, and what should that oversight and governance look like? Eileen?
Sure. Well, I would say we were strong proponents of the Fiscal and Management Control Board because we thought there needed to be a board dedicated to the MBTA, so separate from the Mass Department of Transportation Board. We still agree with that. So I think any successor governance structure should be a dedicated one. I do think one of the criticisms I've heard about the Fiscal Management Control Board is they've had so many public meetings that they spend an inordinate amount of time preparing for them and not doing the work, you know, at hand. And so I think striking the right balance to provide transparency to the public, but to allow folks to, you know, to actually run the day-to-day operations is key. And they need to do it.
So I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it back from you there, Eileen, just because we have only about a minute left.
Sure.
And I want to give
Jared
a chance to talk about governance too. Jared, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I echo everything Eileen has said. I think one of the things that's really important to know is, you know, that the FMCB has been really great at cutting, you know, the rate of operating growth. And I think a big reason why, you know, it's gone up this year is because of the safety report. And so I think that's one of the things that we have to balance is, you know, yes, you know, we want to make sure that the operating budget, you know, isn't growing and it's going out of control. But the thing that the safety panel really, you know, pointed out is that they need more money on the operating side for that maintenance. And so I hope that the new board can really zero in on that and really weigh that tough balance on keeping, you know, keeping the financial, you know, going in the right direction, but also really prioritizing safety and making those investments that are needed for safe service.
All right. That's Jared Johnson, the Chief Operating Officer of Transit Matters. Jared, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
and Eileen McEnany, president of Massachusetts Taxpayers Foundation. Eileen, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.